Hello and good morning and welcome to another exciting episode of Radio Wild. I am your co-host for today. My name is Alan Lacey. Our other co-host, Chris Anderson, is unfortunately a little bit under the weather today, so he is unable to join us, but we still have a pretty exciting episode lined up for you. But first, we just wanted to talk a little bit about some exciting things coming up here in the near future. This summer, we are hosting, again, the Summer Celebration at the Wolf Education and Research Center in Winchester, Idaho. It's an awesome time, an amazing event if you can get out to it. Last year, we were able to have a National Geographic television host, Casey Anderson, there to talk to us about some of his exciting adventures over the course of years of producing films about wildlife. So we're really excited about this year. We're still looking at some potential people to come, but we're looking at that same type of awesome, invigorating speaker to be able to discuss and talk more about the issues of wildlife today. So look for that coming up the second weekend of June, and that'll be June, I believe, 10 and 11, if I'm not mistaken. That's a Friday and Saturday. So make sure to mark that down in your calendar, and let's just jump in now and get your name in there so we can reserve a campsite for you. Awesome time, a lot of fun, a lot of food, good people, good talks, and of course, you can't do without wildlife. Amazing place to see wolves up close and personal at the Wolf Education and Research Center. Switching gears just a little bit regarding Sawtooth Legacy Films, our film production company. Our film 2 of 3 in a 3-part series about what we're calling the Great Predator Debate has just been released, and we've been getting a lot of positive feedback about it. We're talking about a nation's dilemma, some of the issues that face our nation today when we talk about wildlife and predators in specific, and how they intersect with the landscape and when people and wildlife intersect. Really interesting documentary. I highly recommend. If you haven't seen, you need to go and check us out and be able to watch the film. You can also check out the first one, The Great Wolf Divide. It's kind of a prelude to what this second film is about. So you can check them out. Go to our website, wolfcenter.org, and look for our films, The Great Wolf Divide and this one, The Great Predator Debate, A Nation's Dilemma. Must watch. And for those of you who've been following us over the past year have probably noticed we've been doing a series on the Great Predator Debate here on Radio Wild. We've been talking with a lot of the different characters that have been in our film, the last one, The Great Predator Debate, A Nation's Dilemma. And we're recreating these interviews and highlighting some of the important issues that the film addresses and bringing it to you here on Radio Wild so that you can kind of get a first glance at what it is that we believe is an important issues moving forward to how to work with wildlife and with people in specific. So today is no different. We're going to actually talk with Todd Nash. He's the president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. And Todd's a really great guy, and he lives in eastern Oregon on a ranch, operates some head of cattle, and he's a really interesting guy, so I encourage you to stick around and listen to what he has to say. I guarantee you, you'll be fascinated by it, just like we were. But before we talk to Todd this morning, I wanted to talk a little bit about something new on our website that maybe some of you guys have noticed, maybe not. But it's our new donate page, and it's got some pretty cool new exciting features that I think are awesome. Those features being that you actually have the ability to select how you want your funds to be contributing to our cause, whether that's taking care of our wolves or some of the on-site maintenance that's required, or perhaps even Radio Wild, this program here. We do a lot of things. We often say that we give $1 million worth of value on a $100,000 budget. Granted, our budget's a little bit more than that, but it's still, you know, these programs don't operate for free. They do require a little bit of funding to keep things going, and our primary care being that the care of wolves. So we really highly appreciate all of your donations that you give to us. We can't thank you enough. You've been able to support us for the past 20 years, so it's been just phenomenal. Anyways, now we're moving on into the most important part, or exciting part for me in the show, and that's where we get to actually learn more about what's going on in the world of wildlife and conservation. And today we're talking with the Oregon Cattlemen Association's Todd Nash. So we are excited to have you on the program, Todd. And so first of all, just a quick question. I'm just wondering, you know, how did you come about being here in Oregon? And perhaps you could give a little bit of a history on it.
My parents moved here when I was 5 years old, moved here from Davis, California. did a number of things here, from logging to ranching, and been ranching for about the last 20 years on this ranch.
So you're probably no stranger when it comes to dealing with wildlife that maybe come around, and obviously you probably see elk and deer and such, but I'm imagining you've probably had your fair share of dealings with predators, and you know, I'm wondering, you know, how have you been able to deal with those over the last several years?
Well, we've had coyotes and cougars and bears here, and all of which have been very little impact to the cattle. As far as I know, I've never lost anything, any cattle, to a coyote. We did have a cougar one time, moved in and killed five or six calves. We swiftly removed that cougar, and that was the end of that deal. Bears, I've never had a confirmed bear kill. I've suspected that maybe there was at different times, but never been able to verify that.
So I can imagine that when you got the word and the news that wolves are being reintroduced to the Yellowstone area, that must have, you know, caused some kind of a ripple effect amongst the community. And I was just curious, you know, what must have been like for the ranchers like yourself and others in the area to know that wolves were coming, and what did you guys do about it, or how did you react?
Well, the ODF&W Commission had town hall meetings all over the state, knowing full and well that here in Wallowa County would probably be the first place in Oregon that would be affected by wolves. We had to push pretty hard to have such meeting here, and when we did, there were about 500 people showed up to that meeting. There was one individual that was in favor of wolves at that time, and he was paid staff for Hells Canyon Preservation Council. The only person that was paid to be there. He now works for ODF&W, has worked for the governor, and was placed on that committee to help draft the Oregon Wolf Plan. The other 500 people didn't get their spot there, and so we felt like we were largely unheard.
Yeah, I can resonate with you there. It's no one likes to feel like they go unheard, and I can honestly understand that frustration. Moving forward, did people have any concerns, or did you yourself have any concerns how things might have gone?
Well, there were a number of concerns, mostly to do with depredations. Honestly, me myself at that time, I was the least bit concerned. I didn't think it would be any different than cougars, bears, coyotes, anything else that we had going on here. And there was enough history and people looking across other state lines. There were people that knew that there was going to be problems with wolves. One of the issues with wolves that's different than other predators is if a cougar comes in here, she might slip in here, kill a calf, consume it, and you wouldn't be the wiser. A pack of wolves comes in here, they chase this entire herd. They get something tired and they drag it down. It doesn't affect just one animal. It affects the entire bunch.
And it affects them because they run them, or?
Absolutely. Yep. We had a case here in February, just prior to calving season. They had some cattle get run, ran them for over 8 miles. And so no cows killed, no calves killed. But when they started calving season, they had a number of backwards calves that had to be pulled. Some of them tail first, and a calf doesn't come out tail first. It doesn't come out with its hind legs first very well. They had cows that the calves had perforated the uteral lining. What should have been a simple calving season ended up to be an absolute nightmare for them. And I talked to them yesterday. Here it is April, it continues to plague them. the cows themselves on that particular day had ran so far and gotten so shook up that they wouldn't settle down hours after the event. It's a fear that wolves put into cattle that we as ranchers couldn't replicate even if we wanted to.
Now, does this fear, does it have any effect on the cattle? They're afraid, but I mean, like, in the sense of, I've heard there's studies that, you know, cows get thinner and they have less beef on them, so they're actually, the values decrease and such like that. And I mean, have you had any experience with that per se?
I had a calf killed in 2011 and went out to a 1,000-acre pasture. Been out there a couple days previous, and it was as placid a scene as you can imagine. Cattle scattered around, eating grass, everything just as comfortable as can be. I came back 2 days later. The cattle were thinner, but they were settled again. But the entire pasture was tracked up. There was trails all over the place. They had ran from one exit gate to another, thinking probably if they could leave the pasture, things would get better. And then eventually did find the dead calf. Now, may seem odd, but the dead calf was the least disturbing thing that I saw that day. The cattle that had been run as hard as they had to make those trails was very disturbing to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because, I mean, you know, you think about predators when they take an animal. You don't think of the actual act of what's involved when the predator actually does take down one of your livestock. And, you know, that's something that people probably don't often really consider. And, you know, now that wolves are in the area, I mean, you obviously, I'm assuming, contend for predators taking a percentage of your livestock every year. Do you concede to the fact that, you know, wolves are also part of that equation?
I guess I've never conceded to that. You go back to biblical times, and those guys were protecting their herds always, and it was a matter of pride. There was never a time where we conceded that it was okay for a predator to take an animal, we do everything we can to keep these things alive. We're up in the middle of the night. We're up early in the morning. If there's something sick, we take care of it. If there's any way we can mitigate an issue ahead of time with vaccine or whatever, we do it. To concede to the fact that, yeah, we're comfortable with the idea of a predator being out there that's taking our animals, no. That's never been the case.
Well, I know there are several programs out there available, specifically, you know, you always hear about these compensation programs, etc. Then people claim that, well, since ranchers are being compensated for their losses, it shouldn't affect them, and that because of that compensation, ranchers, why are they still hostile against wolves and predators in general, etc.? You know, I just, you know, what? How does that actually work? I mean, is compensation something that you guys are excited about to work with? I mean, does it actually work that way?
I hear all the time that, you know, you're being compensated for it, so it should be okay. And we never raise these animals to be depredated on. Compensation is something that is needed. If wolves are going to be here, we're going to have losses, and to ask us to deal with them, and it's changed a lot of people's lives, the way that they manage livestock. Yeah, we need compensation, but it still doesn't make it acceptable for an animal to kill one of ours.
Now, wolves, you know, obviously being reintroduced now, and they're recovering and coming back to areas they once inhabited, are there any historical evidence that wolves were a problem prior before they were eradicated from the landscape, or are they more of a problem now that they returned, or do you know a way of maybe comparing that?
Not that I can find. I've talked to a number of ranchers, some of which have passed away now, and ask them, do you remember as a child, do you remember your parents or grandparents talking about wolves here? And they can't remember anything. They'll they'll maybe come up with a story where, you know, there was 100,000 sheep in this county at one time. And they'll talk about, yeah, one of the sheep herders said that there was one wolf and, you know, they killed it back in 18 whatever or in the early teens. But there's no talk of these big packs of wolves that we're dealing with now.
I mean, when you are referencing, you know, big packs of wolves, are you talking specifically about the number of wolves in each pack, or maybe more like, you know, the number of packs that are generally within the area that are affecting you that way? Because I know wolves are still recovering in Oregon. They're not as prevalent as they are like you would see in Idaho and elsewhere. But I mean, they're recovering now, so I guess you could see that moving in. Is there, you know, are there large packs here in Oregon?
Well, in 2009 and earlier, there was indications that there were tracks here, and there had been some sightings. In 2009, ODF&W told me that there was one or two wolves in the Lick Creek / Big Sheep area where these cattle spend their late summer, and ended up that fall, Pat Matthews from ODF&W got on film 10 wolves in that pack. And that was the start of it for me.
Is that also the start of when wolves started depredating more on cattle and for all the other ranchers there too?
Well, that fall, this bunch of cows right here, I send out, and every one of them has a calf on them. And when I got to the corral that fall, there was 20 of them that didn't. Yep. That was the first major red flag. I was still, even though I'd seen their tracks in the snow and I'd seen numerous tracks, I was still willing to bite that maybe there was two wolves, but they were just making a lot of tracks. So I was fairly trusting at that time that I was being told straight up what was there.
And what's it like for you, you know, living with wolves and, you know, dealing with that on a daily basis? I mean, you're out there every day working with your cattle, being out there, getting familiar with them, knowing who they are. Is there, what kind of emotional, you know, response does that generate from you, you know, working with your cattle?
Well, you know, it is a business, you know, and we're proud in this business to try to capture as much market share as we can. We're proud if we can be profitable. But there is an emotional attachment that goes with each one of these animals. Almost every one of these cows here behind me, I could identify, tell you what her age is, where she came from, if I purchased her somewhere else. It is a business that it'd be hard for somebody else to understand unless they were in a rancher's shoes.
Do you think that people could understand what, you know, it is that you guys do, and, you know, how working on a ranch is more of a lifestyle rather than just this fantasy hobby of living out in nature, working with cattle, etc., the old Western cowboy thought? Do you think city people are capable of understanding what it is that you do?
No, I don't think that there is a really good understanding as to what we do. I host a couple of kids every year that come from Sunnyside Environmental School, and it's on a rural urban exchange, and they come here, and I was surprised growing up in agriculture that most people didn't understand what production agriculture was, but they thought we just had these cows just to have cows, and they were no different than having a couple of three dogs around the house, but we just chose to have. But then you tell them what the whole process is and what we're doing here, and this ranch here produces enough beef to feed about 43,000 people there in America, what their consumption of beef would be for a year. And we're really proud of that, and I tried to pass that on to those kids, what we're doing. We're feeding a population of people.
You know, I think it's real important that we have, a connection to knowing where our food comes from. I mean, people go to the store these days and they buy something and they don't really understand what took place to get there in the first place. And I think that's important. But there's also a concern amongst the environmental community that, you know, predators are in danger of going extinct because they obviously are directly in conflict with livestock production, which was one of the culprits in why wolves were pretty much eradicated from the lower 48, as well as grizzly bears. Both species are making a comeback now, but there's a lot of concern that, you know, predators are actually dwindling in this day and age. So have you noticed that in the area where you are?
I guess the saber-toothed tiger went extinct and some of those other major predators, but, you know, there were grizzly bears here at one time, and there's certainly a push in the environmental community to try to get them back here, and you know, they're a major threat to a human being as well as livestock. So we have plenty of predators here. The mule deer population has plummeted since the 60s and 70s. You'll see more deer here in this valley than you will in the mountains. About 6 years ago, my son and I took a trip through the mountains here behind us, started out of La Grande and went to the headwaters of the Omnaha, and ended up going 86 miles through the mountains here in late summer and never saw a single mule deer. And that's a radical change. But there's plenty of predators between the coyotes and the lions and the bears. Why, yeah, there's plenty.
Now, are coyotes, are they much of a problem that you have to deal with? I mean, they're obviously much smaller than a wolf and probably aren't capable of taking down a full-grown cow, but I'm sure that they are more than likely to potentially take, you know, some of the young calves and such that are born. Are coyotes a problem for you guys? I know there's a lot of control methods out there to keep those populations at bay. But, I mean, maybe they're out of balance. I don't know. Perhaps you could give us some more insight on that.
Well, in balance, you know, we have several ranchers, at least one that I can think of that's a fairly large producer, that doesn't allow any coyote shooting on their place. And in 60 years of calving on their place, they have never lost a calf to a coyote. Had a fairly symbiotic relationship where they drug their dead calves and dead calves cows off in a pile and let them scavenge on them. And it's thought that we just shoot everything that moves, but that isn't the case at all. We've got along here in Wallowa County in particular very well. There's a healthy ground squirrel population. I think the coyotes work on them when they're not working on other scavenging and killing fawns and that sort of thing. We just haven't had many issues here. There's other places where I know they have quite a trouble with young calves and coyotes, but it isn't here. And it's hard for people to understand that we have not just been active predator hunters here. We've got along pretty good. The main thing that we've seen is the mule deer population plummet.
Well, and quite frankly, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk with you, is because you guys get along so well with predators in this county. And, you know, I think it's a testament to the way you guys do ranching. And so it's really encouraging to see that. And I think it's a great model that other places should look at, too. And maybe it'll help reduce some of the conflict between predators and livestock. You know, there's a lot of people that talk about predator-friendly beef and such, and, you know, is that something you've heard about, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I hear of wolf-friendly beef, and I've heard some environmentalists say, you know, well, you know, everybody says that they're willing to pay a few more dollars for wolf-friendly beef and that sort of thing. I say, show me the money. I've never seen a dime from it. And some of those individuals when we went to Salem to talk about compensation, walked away from the table because they didn't think that we need to be compensated, and they disagreed with that issue. And the only conservation group that stayed with those negotiations until the very end was Defenders of Wildlife.
Well, that's actually really interesting because, you know, these advocacy groups are, you know, so vocal about making sure that predators and wildlife have a voice. And, you know, they're very, very quick to go about making sure that that is the case. But, you know, it's good to see that a group like Defenders is out there actually on the ground making a difference. And, you know, it kind of brings up a question. You have these two sides. You know, you've got the people that are pro-wolf, the people that are anti-wolf. It's kind of a controversial issue, obviously. What are your viewpoints towards how these two groups can maybe work together or maybe not?
Well, I think it's part of a greater picture. I think that there are some people that truly just want wolves here. For other people, it's a mechanism to try to remove ranchers off of public lands and some private lands. And I'll give you an example. One fellow I was in contact with yesterday lives in Baker County, Oregon. And the pack that terrorized me for several years chose to spend their summers over with him last summer. He is a smaller producer. He went in with 90 cows the 15th of June. He comes out of that permit area in October 15. Now, so he goes in with 90 cows, 90 calves. He comes back, he has 81 calves, and he is 7 cows short. And he goes in there with his biggest calves, and when he pulls them back, they're 50 pounds lighter than what they normally are. And so when you look at the economic impact of what that actually was, and you take each calf that was killed at $1,500 a head, $2,500 a head for the loss of the 7 cows, and then the 81 that survived, you take the 50 pounds off times 250 a pound, you come up with $46,902.50 is what it was. That was his economic impact for 4 months of a pasture. Now, does he want to go back there again this summer? It's a pretty tough decision. And so we've seen in Idaho where some of those guys that were just like that, one individual went in similar. It was about 100 head. He was 15 calves short the first year, 30 calves short the next year, and he didn't go back the third. And that would be a victory for some of those in those conservation communities that want us not to graze public lands anymore.
Now, what's it like working with these conservation groups? I mean, is this something that's new that you guys are having to deal with, or is, have you been working with conservation groups for a long time?
Well, there's always been as long as I can remember, a tenuous relationship with some of those in the conservation community. I can't speak historically back to early times and early 1900s and some of that, but there's always been issues, lawsuits. It just seems to never end. And whether it's the salmon that gets used as an avenue to remove us or the wolves, we feel that pressure all the time. Using an Endangered Species Act that's out of control has been pretty tough on us.
And what do you mean by pretty tough?
Well, when you look at what the Endangered Species Act was intended for, it specified a few things there at first, bald eagles and a few other things. Well, now we have a listing on salmon and steelhead and bull trout, and those three species alone. Now, bull trout aren't legal to keep, but we fish the heck out of salmon. We fish the heck out of steelhead. And we can fish the streams that have bull trout in them. We get one on our hook, we got to throw it back. But you have a cow next to that stream at the wrong time of year, then you're in big trouble. But you can throw rocks at those fish all day long if you're a camper, and it's perfectly acceptable. That's an Endangered Species Act that has targeted us as cattle producers.
Yeah, there's also seems to be another pretty strong push from people trying to move away from eating beef because of the supposed inhumane practices that are involved. Is that something that concerns you, with people moving away to not consuming as much beef because of those issues? Or, you know, what are your thoughts regarding, you know, that?
Oh, I don't know. Beef's a quality enough product, and that I'm not afraid of it, consumption of it going away. We're really proud of what we do. It's a healthy product. These cattle here, they live a pretty good life. They're in here eating hay for 3 or 4 months out of the year. The rest of the time, they're living the good life in some of the most beautiful country in the world. These calves, they go through a vaccination period that lasts about 90 seconds from the time that they're injected and branded and ear tagged and put back with their mom. The rest of the time, they live a life that most of us would be envious of.
Well, Todd, it's been a pleasure. We've got pretty much one more question for you, then we'll wrap it up. But how do you view yourself? I mean, you got the two sides. Where do you see yourself?
Well, usually in interviews like this or paper articles, I get pitted as the extreme on one side of a rancher that wants to deal with wolves and believes in lethal control of wolves. And to balance those articles out, a lot of times they'll go to somebody that wants all ranchers eliminated off of public and most of private lands. And I don't see myself as a radical. I see ranching as a very normal thing. I see protecting our livestock as a very normal thing. I don't see that being radical at all.
Wow, that's a great point there, Todd. It's important. People seem to want to pit these sides against each other and really make it a big issue and a huge controversy, and the media does a great job of doing that. And you know, when it really boils down to it, we're just people. I mean, you got people on both sides that are very passionate about these issues, and you might have radicals in one extreme on one side and one extreme on the other, but when it comes down to it, I mean, we are just people, and I don't see it really, if you look at it from that standpoint, as being radical. I just think it's just being people, it's being human. So Todd, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us about your viewpoints, how things go working with cattle and the ranches and dealing with predators on the landscape. We wish you the best. I know it's difficult at times, so we just want to say thank you for all you do in working there in Wallowa County to help mitigate between livestock and predator issues, and all the mitigation you're doing there is awesome work. Well, that wraps up our show for today here on Radio Wild. Thank you for tuning in and for listening to us. We have a show on the first Monday of every month. I know the last couple of months we haven't been on target with that, but we're getting back on track here. So you can tune in on the 1st of April, which is going to be on the 4th. So make sure to tune in there at Radio Wild. We are planning to speak with a really exciting, dynamic person. I'm excited to do that. We'll announce it here at a later date, but it's going to be a really awesome program. We're probably going to do it live on location somewhere, so that's going to be awesome. Definitely want to check us out there. Also, make sure to subscribe to us on Facebook at the Wolf Center. Also, check us out online, www.wolfcenter.org. Make sure to check out that new donate page, because like I said, there's some awesome options for you there to choose how your funds are helping us out. And you can also help us here on Radio Wild to help fund this program for the next year. Well, folks, I hope you have a wonderful day. Get out into nature, enjoy the wild outdoors, and if you take some awesome photographs, go onto our Facebook page and send them our way. We'd love to see what you're out there doing. And for that, I'm Alan Lacey. I am signing off from Radio Wild, and we'll look forward to talking with you next time.